Cheers gets its first spin-off. Daft Punk travels around the world and MacGruber's a freaking genius this week in 302010.
302010. Three decades, every show, sometimes associated videos. 302010. 302010. Surprises are awaiting. Yes, we're going to the 80s, then the 90s, and 2000s.
It's time for a new episode of 302010, a weekly look back at what happened 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago. Yes. That's 87, 97, and 2007. Week by week, we are in January 20th through the 26th. I'm one of your hosts, Brett.
I'm your better host, Chris Antista.
You've already made that.
Damn. I'm Dave Gruber. Dave Redman.
I'm Diana Goodman, and I got nothing funny to say.
Oh, man.
I'm Diana Goodman, and I'm fierce.
The energy in this room.
Beginning in 1987, as we are wont to do. Mm-hmm. Before we get started, though, you can always follow along at 302010.net, where we post articles for each episode with the notes of the show, some of the clips that we play, some of the YouTube videos that we'll see, like for music that takes us in and out of each segment. But it's a good place to leave a comment about the show, about Laser Time in general, the network we all of our shows
are
on.
And again, it's great to hear people give personal feedback from this point in time. Because your age and your location will make your anecdotes different, and that's the thing that is important about the show. It's how we remember this stuff.
Absolutely. And we're kicking off a new year, 87. In the news, facing arrest after taking a bribe, Pennsylvania State Senator R. Bud Dwyer.
Oh my God!
Shoots and kills himself at a televised press conference.
Now let's play that clip.
Hey man.
Yeah. So Filter's "Hey Man, Nice Shot" is
about R. Bud Dwyer, and again, to me, is the most respectable politician of all time. Got caught in corruption, took himself down hardcore. Is this like...
He didn't have to do it in front of everybody?
Yeah.
How satisfying would that be?
When you watch that clip where he, like, he takes out the gun and everyone's like,
don't worry.
Don't worry. Mouth pop.
Yeah. You can see the whole room, like, light up, like, oh my God.
Don't worry. I'm only going to shoot myself.
And there's, like, a famous creepy, shitty, like, creepy photo of him, like, with his hand out, like, oh, no, don't worry.
Yeah.
With a pistol in his hand. Then he shoots himself in the head.
Wow, that happened this day? Man.
Is he the person that, probably JFK is higher, but, like, the person that most people have seen die?
Huh. Well, we talked about it recently. Saddam Hussein, I bet that went out to more people. But
I haven't seen that, though. Is it
you
good?
Haven't seen that?
Is it good?
I'm sorry.
It's a little anticlimactic.
It won any awards.
Where does it rank on BuzzFeed's top 10 televised deaths?
It's nothing to write home about. And I do write home about almost every assassination.
Mother, father.
Dearest mother.
R. Bud Dwyer.
Archduke Ferdinand died. Right.
I think that's the first in the first like phases of death VHS passed around people's houses.
It was one of the first videos I looked up on the internet, and that'll tie in to a fun fact in the final segment of the show that I have. It's really neat.
I remember just thinking it was weird, like, wait, he shot himself in the head, in the mouth, but blood's coming out of his nose. How does that work?
It's all connected, man. The face is colluding with itself.
It's a lot of blood.
I'm going to say conspiracy. He never killed himself. I'm sorry. He didn't.
Yikes. Was it just like unrecoverable? Like, was the corruption something so deep and awful?
Because
like
know.
I feel it, like we hear things now about people, things that they do, and they're like, I don't care.
I was
elect me again. I dare you.
Speaking as someone who lived in Philadelphia in the 80s.
Oh God.
Oh fuck no, man. Yeah. No, that shit was tip of the iceberg. Yeah. I mean, I know he wasn't from Philly. He was from somewhere farther upstate, but. No.
And I know I should
look up any video of Mayor Frank Rizzo. That guy is hilarious.
With a name like that?
His name is Rizzo.
His name is. There's a couple.
Jerky Boys default for any gangster.
I'm Frank Rizzo.
Hey, Frank Rizzo.
I got pimples on my ass. That's Jerky Boys.
There's video of him, as a journalist, like, comes up to him and asks him, like, didn't you just leave office? Why are there police, like, guarding your house? And he's like, I'll fight you right now. We's go behind the wall, you crumb. Like, you are, like, every stereotype ever.
Wow.
Yeah. Philadelphia was a fucked up place, man.
I bet he would have liked our first movie this week, Jocks. Yeah.
Jocks, sex comedy starring no one I've ever heard of except for Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds. Yeah. Playing Ogre from Revenge of the Nerds. Hey.
Today's college athletes aren't just interested in scoring, winning, or kicking the other team's butt. Hell no, they've got more important things on their minds.
Hey!
You know, you're cute, but you're not my type.
They're dedicated to driving their dean.
I want to win!
Their faculty. And their coach.
Hiya, coach.
Out of their minds.
This is the most, I don't know, like that joke about the 80s sex comedy.
Sex comedy.
It's just so evocative of that. And those movies are, man, I cannot believe how poorly they hold up. I came of age, coming of age to these films. Like, they were my late night.
Yeah.
They helped me become a man. Yeah. But they're all so weird and rapey and like.
yep.
Yeah.
There's a lot of
the whole putting the camera in the sorority and rent of the nerves.
That's the least of it.
And then literal having sex with the cheerleader while pretending to be another man.
Yeah, but we did like our Facebook community, which is amazing. Did Daniel? He spearheaded like a marathon of these sex and they were like they were transfixing, deeply uncomfortable. Yeah. And I saw it on my Instagram because they had a fat character. His name is like Fat Fucksworth.
Yeah.
And he's wearing a shirt that says I eat anything.
Yeah.
So all the cheerleaders bend over, pull up their skirts, and they spell out eat shit with their asses. They're like, this is amazing.
You know what I always found so weird about sex comedies? I mean, they obviously treat women as objects. Mm-hmm. But then when they get to the point where it's like, and now it's time for the sex. You won in the end.
Yeah.
You sort of get the feeling like,
First prize.
They have no idea what this is. They have no idea. Like the goal is to see some titties.
And then it's
like, okay, now you take off your clothes and
put my dick in the titties.
Yep. Now we will have intercourse. Like,
now I get
to
pee on that butthole.
What? And you know it'd be over.
It is the dog catching the car where you're like, what am I supposed to do?
She puts a bra on my head and I faint. So what else am I supposed to do? But yeah, this Jocks, Jesus Christ.
Do they
Christ.
Say the name of the movie?
Oh, yeah.
Jocks.
Yep.
Jocks.
Jocks.
All right.
How did they get an A-L-K in there?
Yes.
Also out this week, The Stepfather.
Oh, yay.
Which is, we got a trailer clip here.
Yep.
He's a wonderful man, and he wants to care for us. I don't know. There's just something about him.
Oh, that guy in Bellevue that killed his whole family. Cut him up with knives. Maybe they disappointed him.
Ooh, recognize the voice of John Locke, Terry O'Quinn.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
As the murderous stepfather.
This is like totally one of his breakout sort of roles. I mean, he was a hey, it's that guy for a billion years, but I feel like this is his starring turn.
He's great. I just met him, and he was so nice in Chicago this year. I have a terrible... One of the most unflattering pictures of me ever, so I never put it up on any of my social medias, but he looks great. And he looks great in this movie, because super sinister and intense. Again, John Locke from Lost, remember the orange smile guy? Lots of X-Files episodes.
The stepfather.
The stepfather. Again, this has also been remade, like The Hitcher from last week. Very weird movie, kind of a cult classic. And I just...
I feel like, again, it's like, that's a solid B movie. It knows what it is, and it does it well.
The cool... I hate going off on these tangents. Based very loosely off of John List, a man who very methodically killed his wife, mother, and three children.
Oh.
And nobody knew for a month. He, like, wrote, like, school, they're going to be out of school for, like, 2 months because they're going to North Carolina. And then, like... And then changed his identity...
Wow.
And got married, and it took them 17 years to find the guy.
Yeesh.
And he didn't kill his new family, but he only got caught. How? This being the 80s? America's Most Wanted. America's Most Wanted brought John List to justice so he could... And I don't think he got any money from the stepfather, because it's, again, loosely based.
Wow.
That you could just disappear and become an accountant somewhere, in the 70s.
I mean, 20 years later, Chris Benoit would prove you can't get away with it anymore.
That's right. You got to Dwyer yourself.
You got to Dwyer yourself.
Oh, my God.
We'll be talking about that in a few months. Yep. Don't you worry.
June to be exact. June. Half a year away.
And then also this week is... The Alamo.
The Alamo.
13 Days to Glory.
Don't play this clip. Wait. You play the minute at the minute mark.
Yeah, put the timestamp in for the trailer itself.
Yeah.
tonight. This is for Texas and freedom.
When America had real heroes.
Take a look over there. The outnumber is 20 to 1.
We did come here to fight.
A handful stayed, and they fought like hell.
What are you fighting for?
I don't like being owned.
Outnumbered and outgunned. They made a stand for liberty. James Arness as Jim Bowie. Brian Keith as Davy Crockett. Lorne Greene as Sam Houston. Raul Julia as Santa Anna. The fight to the finish that shook the world. An all-new action spectacular. The Alamo, 13 Days to Glory.
I got no time for the Alamo movies anymore.
But Raul Julia as Santa? I gotta watch this.
We'll ride the sleigh of the world.
Man, Santa was at the Alamo?
For
no wonder they won.
For you, it was Christmas. For me, it was Tuesday.
I don't historically know that much about the Alamo, and I don't want to get all preachy about that, but it might be a huge patriotic battle. It might be a method of preserving slavery. I don't know. You look it up on your own, but the point is I don't watch movies about the fucking Alamo anymore.
God, there have been so
unless it's
Pee Wee
Herman's Big Adventure.
Yeah, yes. Alamo.
I don't have a basement there. I know that much for sure.
Seriously,
Jan Hooks told me.
I can think of like 5 or 6 Alamo
movies.
Yeah,
dude. Movies. They try and make them like every they used to try and make them every 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a movie about the Alamo that came out this week, and my job is done.
Well, it was a TV movie, to be exact.
TV movie.
And I want
those
you to keep
some TV caliber actors, too.
This land we took.
Yeah. So I wanted to save the beginning of the clip, because you're going to talk about it later.
Yes.
Did
you
find the same thing?
Yes, okay. I did. So keep that tab open, Brett. Mm-hmm. January 21st, 1987, Cheers' first ever spinoff, The Tortellis, debuts.
Oh, shit.
Which it's focused on Carla's ex-husband, who's played by Dan Hedaya.
Dan Hedaya.
Yep.
It was great. I love Dan Hedaya.
He moves with his trophy wife and his son, who is also Carla's son, to Las Vegas. It was canceled very quickly. It was done by May of 1987. Mm-hmm. And it was resolved that the family just moved back to Boston from Las Vegas. So I have a promo for the show, which you can play.
I gotta look this up. Was his wife played by Gene Kasem?
Yes, the wife of Casey Kasem.
Right. You remember from Ghostbusters, the blonde lady at Lewis Tully's party.
Oh yeah.
No.
Yeah, with the really squeaky voice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going home. Casey Kasem's wife.
I'm sensing that we're not gonna hit the sheets together.
Nick gets the final dump from Carla and goes back to his wife.
Take me back.
But can the new Nick resist temptation?
I'll feel good if I resist. I won't feel so bad if I don't. I can't lose.
From the creators of Cheers come the Tortellis.
Can you think a joke?
Not when it's married to my sister.
New this Thursday.
Thursday. But if you go back to the beginning of the
Alamo
movie was introduced by very special guests.
NBC really putting their stock in this.
Hang on.
Hey, I'm Nick Tortelli, dancing yet madcap star of the new comedy, The Tortellis, which premieres Wednesday after Give Me a Break, inviting you to stay tuned for a great movie tonight on NBC.
Dime is loving wife, Loretta, and this is my sis,
Charlotte. Beauty and the Beast here live with me. Enough pleasantries, Nick, tell them about the movie.
Anything for my sister-in-law. It's called The Alamo, 13 Days of Glory. It's exciting like me, and it's action like me. And once you see it, you'll always remember The Alamo. But don't forget me.
God. I love emphasizing
battle, many people died, but don't forget my show premiering soon.
I love emphasizing what a small world it still was, where two new things came out and they both were
intersected in a weird way. Also, that is one take.
Yeah, oh,
they had
yeah.
to do it in one
it's,
take
oh,
for some
yeah.
reason.
He's flubbing.
It's
yeah.
one take, and he's like, and you know,
madcap star of the new comedy, The Tortellis, which premieres Wednesday after Give Me a Break, inviting you to stay tuned for a great movie.
Okay.
Could you spell what he just said? Tortellis.
It's one sentence, one syllable. He's got to be either coked up or hammered, like something's
I think
up.
He's bored and he's reading off of cue cards, man. Because normally he's a pro.
Dan Hedaya is great. He's great in Usual Suspects.
Throws his arms up, ropes come out.
Is he Usual Suspects?
He is. He's the Chaz Palminteri's partner as a cop.
God, that's
and
right.
And he's great in First
Wives
Club, and he's great as in Clueless as the father. I love Dan Hedaya. I always thought he was like a light Robert De Niro. And you can't get Robert De Niro, you get Dan Hedaya. He's good.
Well,
that's
pretty good. Even more forgotten of a comedy, debuted after Super Bowl 21. So Super Bowl 21, the New York Giants beat the Denver Broncos. And the post Super Bowl show is the most Troy McClure handle with care show I've heard that's followed.
Did we mention this on Laser Times? It was the post game show shows that got in the first one. That's my favorite trivia bit, yeah, was fucking Lassie.
Yeah.
Lassie is the first show to get launched after the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl push.
The 80s is
67? Yeah. So it was a new Lassie?
Yeah, I guess so.
In color.
It took until the 90s for networks to realize, like, let's just put our most popular show. Mm-hmm. It will get the highest ratings ever. Mm-hmm. If we put it on after the Super Bowl, we'll actually be talking about it for 1997. Mm-hmm. But 1987, the show that premiered after the Super Bowl was the pilot for The Last Precinct, which starred Adam West as a police captain assigned to shape together
crime.
Yeah, he has to shape together a group of police academy rejects because it's 1987, you guys.
Oh God!
And one of those rejects was played by Ernie Hudson, fresh off of Ghostbusters.
Yay.
Wow.
And this show will be canceled by April after 8 episodes.
How many cops or commissioners has Ernie Hudson played?
Yeah.
Huh. And he was a warden in Oz.
Yeah, if you add warden, but mm-hmm. yeah.
That's an authority figure.
Yeah. No, criminal justice authority figure. Mm-hmm. I think he's probably mm-hmm. played all of them. Like,
love
everyone.
Ernie Hudson.
He's always there somehow. The background. Mm.
I'll tell you, those cops from The Last Precinct, I don't think they could solve Unsolved Mysteries, which debuted on January 20th, 1987. Here's that classic theme.
Stonehenge.
Can I say this is probably the scariest theme song ever made?
Ugh. Oh wow!
It's
crop
so
circles.
Close to being Halloween.
It really is Halloween.
I'm desperately hoping Robert Stack will say updates. We've solved this one.
I have too much of a connection with this show. I became obsessed with it, but it also really, really terrified me.
Right.
A friend of mine in school starred in one of the reenactments that helped me get through. That they bothered to shoot it in Florida. There was a lot of stuff like Stonehenge and aliens and this and that. But then there was also like just literally unsolved murders.
Yeah.
And like nobody, there's no suspect because a stranger came up to the window and shot someone. Oh. There was like two of those, and I became afraid of windows at around 8 years old.
And more of a Mac man.
Linux guy. But I swear to God, this started me. Man, it sounds weird. Sleeping with dolls again in about 89 or 90. Yeah, and I still sleep as if I'm clutching a stuffed animal because Unsolved Mysteries really terrified me. When I was into books about alien abductions and scary stories to tell in the dark, but this really rattled me. And I guess because our whole family watched it, and every single time they had to mention Robert Stack made a huge pass at my grandma.
Oh.
And I've heard the story a billion times, and finally I realized in my head, I'm like, he probably just said hi to you.
Yeah.
And it's the most exciting thing that ever happened to you, Grandma.
Did he hit that? That's a mystery.
more of this dick so after the break.
Yeah, there was one point where I kind of wanted to calculate how far has Robert Stack walked on Unsolved Mysteries, because every time they cut back to him, he's taking about 4 steps towards the camera.
In an aviator jacket,
you know,
with his hands in his pocket.
You know, William Shatner wasn't walking on Rescue 911. They
put a dolly under
him.
No.
Is this where Robert Stack will come in?
Nah, probably not.
Just more theme songs?
Yeah, this is just the straight theme, but like most episodes, it would be like, up next, a boy walks off in tool shed. We find out who did it.
It is also important that people not fixate on the skin colors of the victim and the criminal, but rather focus on the crime itself.
Oh. Wow, all right. Okay. That's the voice of Transformers Ultra Magnus from the Transformers movie.
Up next, Bigfoot embezzles.
But this episode that
he is great at it.
This first episode did not have Robert Stack.
Really?
It had Raymond Burr.
Oh, no! Wow.
Godzilla 1984 star.
And Godzilla
85 star. And 54,
And then Carl 55. Malden would do 2 episodes. So Robert Stack doesn't start as the host of Unsolved Mysteries until like November of.
But they had a type. I mean, those three guys are really fitting into the same type of gruff old guys who probably played cops a lot.
Yeah,
Perry Mason himself.
Mason himself.
But then Robert Stack, I think Virginia Madsen's been a host, and I forget who they did a revival like.
I get confused with Twilight Zone.
Last decade, and
so
I forgot.
No, it's not Forrest Whitaker. Yeah. He did Twilight Zone. But what I did see, there was a recent news story that Amazon, through Amazon Prime, is going to resurrect the show and follow up.
Yeah.
Well, make addendums to the older episodes.
Apparently,
awesome.
Unsolved Mysteries has a YouTube channel where they where they update a lot of the old stuff. Which
it's
is
pretty
great.
Nuts,
God,
man.
Who's in charge of that?
I don't know.
That seems like such
like
a fun job.
Guy. Yeah.
Such a fun job.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I remember, I get to tell this story because this audio is perfect for this. I'm going to make fun of my brother now, Jeff. Hi, Jeff. Yeah, he was terrified once by Unsolved Mystery, something about alien abduction. Mm-hmm. And I was asleep one night, and all of a sudden, out of the other room, I hear, aliens! Slam! Slam! Aliens! Big slam.
It's a big movie.
And all I could, and it was amazing. It was like perfectly like as a radio play. It was Jeff screams, jumps out of bed, first slam, door slams open, runs down hall, slams open mom and dad's door, yells aliens, and launches himself into their bed,
wow.
Screaming the whole time.
This was a supremely
and I was
terrifying.
Like, Jeff scared. Back to sleep.
I think this is probably the first show that taught me that there was evil in the world. The supernatural stuff, that's what I was in for. But then they just tell you about, like, yeah, here's a fucking murder that happened to anybody, and
yeah.
It's never been solved. And it could happen to you because the person's out there.
Yeah. But once in a while, he would hit you with the update, and then you're like, oh, yes, thank you. There is good in this world.
Yeah.
Unless they're like, oh, no, they're all dead. By the way, the last host of Unsolved Mysteries was Dennis Farina. It was revived like around 2007.
We cut the gay.
R.I.P. Again, another guy just played cops a lot.
Yeah.
Man. Perfect. R.I.P. That guy.
More TV. This is a stacked week. A Robert stacked week. January 22nd, 1987. The Cosby Show episode Hello to a Goodbye, B-U-Y, airs. This is the most ever watched episode of The Cosby Show, according to Wikipedia. I have no idea why, because it's not on the same night as the Super Bowl, I believe. So it was watched by over 65 million viewers.
Whoa.
And in this episode, Cliff pretends to be poor to get a good deal on a car. And this scene where he's trying to buy the car features
sweeps. Like,
yes. But it has two guest stars in this scene where he's buying the car. Let's see if you guys can recognize them by voice.
Well, why don't we take your new car out for a test drive?
My new car?
Oh, yes. In addition to being a salesman, I can also see into the future. And I see you in that car.
Can you also see me getting a good deal?
Oh, I see you getting a great deal.
Oh, right.
Dr. Huxtable!
Scream.
Dr. Huxtables!
Yeah.
It's good to see you, Doctor.
Yeah. How are you, Mr. Babbitt? What are you doing here?
I'm having my car serviced. What about you? You thinking about buying?
Well, I came to buy a station wagon, maybe.
A station wagon with all of your money? And look, what are these clothes you're wearing? I go into this guy's office. He wears designer sweaters. Yeah. One of his sweaters costs more than my whole wardrobe.
So
Gilbert Gottfried.
That is,
yes.
He's easy to guess. The other guy,
Shazam himself.
Yes,
Sinbad.
Sinbad. Oh, okay.
I will never believe otherwise.
Star of a genie movie. Yes,
star of some genie movie.
Wow,
65 million people.
That's crazy. That is insane.
Million.
That is insane because I believe the numbers are like if you can get a million people to watch a network television show, you probably get promoted.
Yeah.
And they get millions because, like, even Raw, which is like by Raw standards,
like
is in the dumps, is like can break three.
But that is the definition of a successful show.
Yeah,
1/65 of the Cosby Show.
Yeah. Do we know what the share was on that? Because that's the one I'm always interested in. Where it's it had a 42 share. So 42% of all TVs were watching this.
That's so nuts.
Oh my god.
How do you even do a 42 phone share? they were watching 24. The rest were tapping bubbles. Like,
I'm sure far fewer people watched
the show the next night. January 23rd, 1987. I told you he'd be back. Mr. Belvedere episode Jobless airs.
Yes.
In this episode, George, who is Bob Uecker, he loses his sports writing job and goes to the unemployment office and stops a mugging happening there. But in the process, since the news covers this, it brings media attention to the fact that he has no job, and that brings him great shame. So at the end of the episode, he's receiving an award for his heroics. And during this scene, someone before him has a much better story of heroics. And let's see if he can recognize this guest star. He probably can because his voice is way different than it usually is.
So as soon as I saw the smoke coming out of the window, I ran down to the corner and turned in the alarm to the fire.
I have a guess. As soon as I can see him.
Was it a fire at the time?
Wesley started
That's
a fire again.
That's when I heard someone yelling from the second floor. So I went inside, ran upstairs, and came down with Mrs. Simmons and her little baby girl.
Yeah, Will Smith, right?
No.
Is that Sonic the Hedgehog?
Yes.
Oh, Jaleel White.
Yeah.
Did I say that?
And a pre Urkel Jaleel White.
Wow. Yeah.
Year two away from the Urkelizing world.
Jesus.
Ernie Masters. God, I love Mr. Belvedere. I'm gonna become.
Can you just figure? Brett,
yes?
Like you did with Star Trek The Next Generation, please give me an article in the 10 Mr. Belvedere episodes you must watch.
The one where the tornado hits him. Okay. This one.
The last one, the first one, the middle one.
The one we talked about yesterday. That's all I got.
So let's move on to January 26th, the greatest ever math-based TV show debuted on PBS. Let's hit that music.
Oh, I love this music.
Oh, I know.
Square One Television.
Gotta hit that jazzy interlude.
You could confuse this for a Nintendo Power commercial.
Yes.
Same frame rate.
Or Slam Dunk compilation. Again, I gotta make one.
Or SNL from 70s and 80s.
MathNet.
Yes.
MathNet.
MathNet, MathMan. Other math-related things,
I'm
sure.
MathMan.
But I feel like this also kind of eased me into my love of sketch comedy because it was basically a bunch of skits related to math.
One of the women in the show went on to be in On Living Color.
Yeah.
Like from, but Square One is a
the one that got married to George Stephanopoulos.
Yeah, public. Our tax dollars paid for the show, so we can play it all we want.
Yeah.
MathMan.
MathMan, your mission is to eat only multiples of six.
MathMan being a Pac-Man parody. Where this helmet runs around and eats numbers.
It predates Number Munchers.
You will have until the count of three to make your decision. And beware wrong. Math man.
That sounds like
Is 72 a multiple of six, guys?
Yes.
There's one now.
Correct.
Yes.
And in your school, there was a program instituted a long time ago called Cable in the Classroom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is the one thing we'd watch. Like the whole school would watch at the same time every week. We watched Square One.
Wow.
And we remember so much about it, the country song about the divisibles of nine. But MathNet, like the fucking classroom would cheer. A Dragnet parody. Involving cops. And it got a spinoff. It got a short lived spinoff. I've never been able to find it, but a MathNet series that apparently went 30 episodes.
Yeah, they finally busted that impossible. Prime number.
Dividing things not by himself.
Man, I love Square One. That theme song, that and the 3-2-1 Contact song, like instantly give me warm and fuzzies from.
I love 3-2-1 Contact. Yeah.
Old PBS.
I held on to an issue of the magazine because the Godzilla was on the cover.
Nice. Yeah.
And last but not least, same night, January 26, 1987. Long before Reddit did it, there was the American Music Awards, the AMAs. favorite pop/rock male artist, Lionel Richie. Favorite pop/rock female artist, Whitney Houston. Favorite band, duo, group, Huey Lewis and the News. Kind of also sounds like a single artist there. Favorite album, pop or rock, Whitney Houston, by Whitney Houston. Favorite video, Dancing on the Ceiling. Favorite female video artist, that's really cutting it pretty thin, Madonna.
Well, and the male was Billy Ocean.
Is this the American Music Awards?
Necessary? No.
No, it's not. I want to say that's the one that like Dick Clark made up, and it's really just based on album sales, and it's kind of, it's
like what we do.
It's a lot like the Grammys, but even more nakedly so. In that, like, if you're a huge star, we will create a category for you to show up and give you an award. Yeah. If you say you'll show up, we'll probably come up with something we can give you.
For most changed skin palette, Michael Jack.
Taking us out of the 80s, not a lot of game stuff because it's just still super quiet in January of 87. Mm-hmm. Music at this moment is number one, which is Billy Vera and the Beaters. A song from, song from 1981 that was re-released and used in Family Ties. Okay. And because the song was gaining popularity, it's Michael J. Fox's like theme song with the girl he's dating in the show or something.
Wow. Oh, wait. I think I know this one. It's not
that one.
No, because this happened at least one other time. There was the What Would You Think You Would Say at This Moment? Yeah, that like recharted because it was on an episode of Family Ties.
So that's apparently what happened with this is it renewed interest and the song was re-released. And in 1987, it became a number one hit again.
Wow.
Which is a great reminder. Because it's 1987, and if a song wasn't sitting in a store or on the radio, you couldn't hear it. So when a song from even 5-6 years earlier shows up, you're like, Did we? Is this a new song or not? Who can say? It's not. There's nowhere to write it down, so let's sell it again. And people are like, sweet, let's go download this song again. Control, the remixes. It's Janet Jackson's remix album. It didn't come out in the U.S., but I believe Japan, Europe, Australia got a remix album for Control, which was a huge hit in all of 86. But the
congratulations to Janet Jackson.
The biggest thing that, like, I don't know much about this. I know that it exists, and I know it's a thing, is the return of Bruno. Bruce Willis sings R&B hits.
This is why Moonlight was missing all those dates for their new episodes.
Yeah, he's so busy.
So what? Bruce Willis decides he wants to make an album
and
sings blues songs.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Under his Bruno name.
And who is Bruno?
It's his just stage persona, where he blows in a harmonica and 18 more talented people who are paid less behind him to play the actual music.
Well... this out this week. And,
are you going to play us out with Bruno?
We're going to put...
It would take him like 4 or 5 years to start making Planet Hollywood so he could force people to listen to his music while he plays live at those things.
I'm not sure what song we should go out with, but the lead single is Respect Yourself.
I'm a fan of
that's
his...
That's a good song, too, but
he had a Saturday morning
him.
Cartoon called Life with Bruno or
Little
something.
Bruno?
Little Bruno. That's got a good little theme played
what
by
the
him.
Fuck?
I don't know.
Secret Agent Man.
Oh, man. Boy, AllMusic says Willis doesn't quite have the conviction or skill of the Blues Brothers.
He does have time and money.
Correct. So go on with Respect Yourself from The Return of Bruno. And we come back this same week, 1997.
Respect Yourself.
You like Laser Time shows? Then you might like Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly bonus show exclusively on patreon.com/lasertime. Here's a taste of what you've been missing. We just did our most anticipated of the year, blah, blah, blah. I should have said Sherlock. Yeah, and I thought it was so cool, man. Like, that show is so much fun. And it's back. I don't know how you watch it. I call my parents call, and my dad's like, you checking out Sherlock? My dad has never had to recommend programming to me before. He's never been more caught up
than me. I got it from the Red Box.
It made me so mad. He's like, oh, the first episode is superb. I'm not going to tell you what... He used the word superb, my father, about Sherlock. I had to
I really
catch
enjoyed
up.
The characterization.
Well, he likes the books. And
is he smoking a stogie while he does that?
Yeah.
I don't know who you... My dad is not Robert Loggia.
Oh. Well, yeah, the voice you're doing. Stick out your thumb!
Stick out your thumb, son. It's how you should think my dad should sound.
Yeah, fine.
It's more fun that way. If you know that he's like...
As far as I'm concerned, your dad is an animated cab.
Those Brooklyn Dodgers bums away!
Get Bonus Time, Laser Time's weekly, full-length, uncensored, and ad-free Patreon-exclusive podcast, as well as weekly full-length movie commentaries, wrestling and cartoon video commentaries, physical rewards, the first season of Talking Simpson, and more at patreon.com/lasertime, starting at just $5. You'll help us live, and we'll do our best to help you never be bored again.
Around the World, as I'm sure you'll hear 30 or 40 times throughout the song. But
song that launched a billion YouTube videos, compilations.
Homework, Daft Punk's debut album, is 20 years old. Around the World is the biggest hit, but also Defunk was a big song off of this. Daft Punk is one of my absolute favorite bands of all time. I found this album. I remember seeing the video for Around the World, which you should really look up the video. It is amazing. Just a bunch of people like
on a old timey musical
on
number,
a raised,
sort of
a raised stage, and they're all moving in unison, and it's just really interesting to watch. And I remember seeing that and be like, "This is awesome." Didn't own the album until later because I just would like listen to this song and recorded it off M2 probably at a friend's house. 2001 Discovery is one of my top 5 albums of all time, but this album is great. But we've talked about in prior episodes. Through things like PlayStation getting big in 96, acts like Prodigy, Future Sound of London, even KMFDM.
Orbital.
Like, a lot of this sound is, like, changing what the word alternative really means, and it's giving this whole other type of music a lot of radio play that it wasn't getting.
Yep.
And for me, this album and Around the World and Defunk are, like, the final tipping points where this French electronic dance band becomes a chart-topping sensation all over the planet, and it's like, now this is really popular music. This isn't like a niche weird thing where only guys that are head-to-toe tattoos or that you're only going to hear in a club or something that you got to put in a Mortal Kombat movie. It's like, no, this is like, people will listen to this and they'll buy it at Walmart now. And this to me is like a big tipping point for that. But Thomas Bangalter from the band said about creating the album, we've got much more control than money. You can't get everything. We live in a society where money is what people want, so they can't get control. We chose. Control is freedom. People say we're control freaks, but control is controlling your destiny without controlling other people. So they own the master recordings to all their music.
Wow.
They don't own the distribution. Whoever their label is, they can distribute the albums however they want forever, but Daft Punk at least owns their music forever, I guess. The first album, 20 years old, and I really do enjoy this one, but Discovery is the one that I think with One More Time, and that's the only single I think that really blew up, but like that whole album is exceptionally good. I would really recommend that. Also out this week, Clumsy, Our Lady Peace, second album, which
I
is
legit like that song.
which is the most successful album with the song Clumsy and Superman's Dead.
Throw away, yes, Harry.
I saw them in concert at the same concert that I mentioned. Wow, yeah. That I mentioned with the 311 Sucks Balls. It was the same concert.
God, everyone was there.
What was that kid's thoughts on
I guess
he
was fine. Dude,
for
what it's worth, the Our Lady Peace time was the best moment of the night because it was an outdoor amphitheater in St. Louis, and it starts pouring down rain, and everyone rips up the tarp that's supposed to cover the hill that we're sitting on, and everyone's holding it over their heads to cover themselves from the rain, and everyone starts lighting up underneath this thing. So it becomes this weird, humid,
giant hot box.
With it storming, and Our Lady Peace is playing because they're like, fuck it, we're not going to stop playing just because it's storming. Yeah. And I'm just like, this is the perfect thing I could do at age 20. This couldn't be any better. Yeah. And Weezer's on next. Yeah. This is great. All right. But news, 1997. This was, where are we at? January 20th to the 26th.
That's the one.
Bill Clinton is sworn in for the second term.
Woo.
This is the first inauguration to be streamed online?
Yeah.
The last Clinton inauguration.
I imagine that it was a real player and it took a while to buffer.
Yeah. 97?
Yeah. Yeah, but this is all coming to a head, like the internet and streaming media right now.
And Madeleine Albright becomes the first female Secretary of State.
Woo!
Mm-hmm. Movies this week. First one, we're not going to say the name of the movie yet. We're going to play this trailer and then see if you can guess.
One day in paradise, a lonely dog named Zeus met an orphan dolphin named Roxanne. And something amazing.
The community. They are talking.
Steve Guttenberg, two episodes in a row. Crossing decades.
The Goot.
The last thing, the last theatrical movie I ever remember seeing him in.
So I've talked about this on the most recent bonus time.
Yeah.
Well, a recent bonus time. Where so I went to my favorite pizza place, still my favorite pizza place, a place called Papalardo's.
Comma Pizza was a rad basement.
Yeah, Sbarro's, the best thing in New York. You're going to love it. Now, Papalardo's Pizza Cove on Long Island, great pizza place. For the longest time, they don't have it anymore, but like one room is the room where you pick up your pizza, and that's fine. Then the room where you sit down and eat the pizza, if you're going to have it there, was basically the biggest shrine to Steve Guttenberg, I would imagine, outside of Steve Guttenberg's house.
Outside of his mother's refrigerator.
Yes. So,
I have a question. Was Papalardo's two words?
Papalardo's is one word. It's the name of the family.
It's
Papalardo's.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, you call me Papalardo.
There doesn't that piece. You eat a slice of that pizza. It doesn't matter what it's called. But so this one room for the longest time was a shrine to Steve Guttenberg because he went to Plain Edge High School, which was like right like you know a 5 minute walk away, and he either worked there or he would go there all the time. So it's so interesting to go there back in the day, because mm-hmm. you see him gradually move out of the center of the movie poster. So Police Academy 1, 2, 3, 4, and Three Men and a Baby, he is right there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Then there's a movie that he did with the Olsen Twins, It Takes Two. He's getting a little bit to the side. The Olsen Twins are popping in there. Wow. Zeus and Roxanne, he is in the corner.
Upstaged by a dolphin,
and a dog. Yes. Yeah. And that's all I know about this movie.
Yeah. I did not see this.
Yep. Damn either.
Also out this week is Prefontaine.
Prefontaine, the first of two of Steve Prefontaine movies, and coming out in the next 18 months.
This is the Jared Leto one, yeah?
Jared Leto, yeah. Right.
Well, it's Hollywood Pictures, that's not a good sign. Coos Bay who could
run. There's Prefontaine.
Okay, we had a C, a real fire eater.
He was the last to expect to finish first.
Hey, guys. Steve Prefontaine.
Yeah!
He's so pretty.
But he had the courage to dream.
Forget Jim Ryan, he's done. I'm going to be the first Steve Prefontaine.
All right. Yes. What's really bizarre is like comparing the two movies. They came out really close together, about the same guy, and the casts. That Billy Crudup is Prefontaine in that movie. This Jared Leto with Ed O'Neill, who you heard, is played by Breaking Bad's Dean Norris in the other movie.
Oh, wow.
Like, just that they all had the same character, the same real people in the movies, like within 18 months of one another.
What's the other one called?
Called Without Limits. Hmm. Huh. But apparently, like, these biopics were in development forever about the famous runner, Steve Prefontaine, who died tragically drunk driving, I believe, but also witnessed the Munich attacks, firsthand, but a famous Olympian runner. I have a feeling the let's hope he holds up in the zeitgeist in the next
in a post Fontaine.
Oh, but he fought. He became an activist for like athletes to have support. Did you see the movie Foxcatcher or the documentary about that guy? Mm-hmm. The idea that like every other government kind of like is invested in their sports team qualifying and doing well in the Olympics, and America kind of isn't, and so. Trying to find private funding to help Olympians do better in the Olympics. And I think he became an advocate for that, and then died, you know, before his time. And so he's remembered by people who aren't me.
And then Love, Valor, Compassion.
Never heard of it. Didn't even look into it.
That's a stage adaptation. I know it's got Jason Alexander in it. I believe playing a gay dude, and I think you see his butt.
I was in the pool.
Yep. I don't know. It's one of those stage adaptations of a stage play that you like haven't really heard of. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, this is fine. Maybe your mom likes it. I don't know. Yep, never bothered.
And then it seems like the one you guys want to talk the most about this week is what? Fierce Creatures.
Yes.
I guess.
Which somehow I know is a sequel to Fish Called
It's Not, but that's the thing. It's not a sequel.
Or like,
it's the same people, same writers, same director maybe?
No,
not the same director. But John Cleese wrote, just play this clip real fast. It's really strange.
From the creators of A Fish Called Wanda.
What are you doing?
I'm getting undressed. For sex.
Comes a different kind of animal.
You can't put an animatronic animal in a zoo?
Yeehaw.
Is there a history of insanity in your family?
Kevin Kline.
Oh, goody, 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 yeah.
Jamie Lee Curtis. John Cleese.
Stop that already! Everything under control!
Michael Palin.
I'm about to make 5 points about the zoo.
And Kevin Kline.
Dad, you screwed up my whole childhood.
How could I have? Wasn't even there.
Fierce Creatures.
I really love this period of Kevin Kline work. I love all that shit. And A Fish Called Wanda is
in Wild Wild West.
Shut up.
A Fish Called Wanda is amazing.
Oh my God, it's so good.
I think, I don't know, I wasn't aware of John Cleese before A Fish Called Wanda. And I think 10 years ago, at any given point in time, you would find this running somewhere on cable. And I feel like I haven't seen it in a decade. But it's a great film.
Now, what, Fish Called Wanda?
Yeah, Fish Called Wanda.
Oh, Fish Called Wanda is, perfect.
I don't know what to call Fierce Creatures. It's not a sequel. They all play different characters, but it's written by John Cleese and starring the same people.
Right. And most of them are playing kind of the opposite of what they played in Fish Called Wanda.
Except Kevin Kline, who's in multiple roles because he was a con man in Fish Called Wanda and played a bunch of people. But this movie is not great.
No,
but it's sort of it's not how long 88 is Fish Called Wanda, so it's not even 10 years later. But it's a reunion of A Fish Called Wanda. I don't even know what to call that. It's a different movie about a fucking zoo that's kind of unremarkable and not that funny and disappeared off the face of the planet, even though Fish Called One is pretty beloved. I hope it's still running somewhere.
Seems like spiritual successor spiritual. Or sequel.
It's just that it's not even spiritual. It's like the same company and like and the same writer, and I'm trying to figure out the same director, maybe?
No, it's not. The Fish Called Wanda is directed by, I'm blanking on his name, but
Charles
Crichton. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
this
Charles
is
Crichton.
Fred Shepard.
So definitely not the same director.
Yeah,
he did Roxanne.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Charles Crichton did like classic Ealing comedies in the 50s and 60s with Alec Guinness.
And an uncredited director credit for John Cleese, apparently.
Oh. Yeah, they had a bunch of problems where they had directors leave or got fired, and I think Fred Schapisi was brought back in, and then there were reshoots, and they had... This was a trouble. They just, there were a lot of rewrites and a lot of problems with it.
It
doesn't hold together. There are a couple bits, though, that I think are really good.
Because they're all really funny people. What it feels like is if... Michael Palin, John Cleese, Kevin Kline, and Jamie Lee Curtis were in a sketch comedy group and made a movie every 6 years. That's what this would be.
Right.
But they have not been.
Yeah. Well, speaking of sketch comedy, what was it, like 3 or 4 weeks ago, Palin and Cleese were on SNL.
Right.
Kind of.
Fierce Creatures.
And that was also disappointing.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Very strange, though.
Fish Called Wanda, seriously. Brett, seen Fish Called Wanda?
I did a long time ago.
Okay.
It's a ton of fun.
Everyone rewatch it.
Asshole!
It is so perfect. We did not lose Vietnam. It was a tie. Little things like that are just, what was I thinking? Oh, Aristotle was not Belgian. The London Underground is not a political movement. And the central tenet of Buddhism is not every man for himself.
Yeah, a screenplay by John Cleese, written by Terry Jones and Michael Palin, or apparently came up with the story.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
If you're a Monty Python fan, this is probably the last thing you'll get to see for a while. Oh, no, there was that recent movie with Simon Pegg.
Oh, yeah. I remember one good bit that was very Fawlty Towers-y, where it's just kind of the escalating lies becoming a disaster. But it cannot compare. Fish Called Wanda, I seriously think, is one of the 10 best comedies ever made.
Yeah, I think it'll hold up for a while.
Yeah, love it. Mm-hmm. The little doggy when he gets squished. So
So moving on to TV, January 26, 1997, Super Bowl 31, Green Bay Packers.
Go Bears.
Yeah. Green Bay Packers beat the Patriots 35-21.
More Packers.
This is notable because it is the first time that Fox got to air the Super Bowl.
Oh.
They had the rights to the NFL.
Oh, wait. Can I maybe guess the show that they...
Shoot.
Is it Family Guy?
Nope.
No.
No, that's like
that did
years?
Premiere after the Super Bowl.
Yeah, it's 2 years later. But this was Fox following NBC's template. I think NBC the year before
so
had Friends.
Is it an existing show?
Yes.
Is it Malcolm in the Middle?
Nope.
Damn it!
It is the X-Files episode Leonard Bettis. Leonard Bettis?
Leonard Bettis.
Okay. Which is about a villain who can eat cancer, right?
He
consumes cancer to survive.
And it's a really creepy looking dude.
Yeah. He's got the weird face mask, whatever thing. But part of the whole episode, even though this is a standalone episode, a Monster of the Week episode, Leonard discovers that Dana Scully has cancer, which is a storyline that goes on for 3 or 4 years and then never addressed again because she's somehow
cured. Because
this guy
ate it.
Yeah. But this might be a mistake on TV Tango, which is the site that we use to research what television was airing each day. It's a great resource. Hope it never goes away. We are screwed if not. But according to TV Tango, January 26, 1997, NBC airing against the Super Bowl, they aired National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Wow.
What?
January? So I can only think of three things that happened. One, there was a mix-up on TVTango.com, and it was just put in the wrong spot. NBC just did not give a fuck. Or NBC was playing some sort of psychological warfare where somebody turns this channel on, thinks it's a month ago, and forgets the Super Bowl is on.
Wow.
So, and you know what? That itself can be the X-Files episode.
Oh.
Wow. Everyone thinks it's Christmas, even though it's January 26th.
Probably impossible to do, because those Super Bowl festivities like 24 hours long on television. The pregame show starts at 4.
Yeah. Maybe if you got super drunk, passed out, and then woke up, is this a Christmas again?
There's nothing I love more in TV marathons, and I don't think it happens much anymore. I love Christmas in July.
Yeah.
A ton of stations used to do that.
Mm-hmm. It's when Hallmark announces their ornaments.
Yep. Is it really? I'm learning this now as an ornament
season.
Fan. Don't follow me on Instagram.
So we got some TV movies to discuss this week. January 20th, 1997, the TV movie Friends Till the End airs. This stars a post 90210, pre-charmed Shannon Doherty, kind of in a reverse role. She's the one being victimized instead of being the bad girl. She's getting single white femaled by a new friend that she made. Here's a promo clip of it.
First, she wanted her family. Then, she stole her lover. Now, she's taking over her entire life.
Don't tell me you're scared of girls.
90210 Shannon Doherty and Jennifer Blanc in a world premiere thriller.
You just name the time and place.
Friends Till the End, NBC Monday.
How would... Okay, I'm just looking over there, and I feel like every single show or promo or anything from 97 we've had for the whole year has to have, like, the sloppy typewriter font.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Yeah, that was the 90s.
Yeah, they got a the typewriter, but it's like it's a broken typewriter. Some of the letters are a little off.
Yeah, lots of film grain or like
the desperation for authenticity that the 90s is so famous for.
January 25th, 1997. This is a movie that I think had the name first, and then they just built around it.
Mm-hmm.
The TV movie Beverly Hills Family Robinson airs about a wealthy California family that ends up shipwrecked on a desert island, but it does have a pretty neat cast.
Meet the Robinsons, the family with everything.
Didn't we agree that we would get something bigger?
But almost nothing in common.
So let's try to act like a family, and let's begin by engaging in some nice table conversation.
And what are we supposed to talk about?
They need a vacation, but what they get is an
adventure gone wild
of
music.
A lifetime.
This is not Beverly Hills.
Sarah Michelle Gellar, Diane Cannon, and Martin Mull star in Beverly Hills Family Robinson.
No.
Yep.
Gross.
I would love to go on a vacation with
Can you
them.
Believe this wasn't in theaters? We got to see it on TV.
I can't believe that's not a Mad TV sketch.
Yes.
Oh my
Jesus
God.
Christ. Beverly Hills Family Robinson?
There's some slightly higher star power in the last TV movie I'm going to bring up. January 21st, 1997, the TV movie A Child's Wish airs.
Oh.
It's based on actual events about a cancer-stricken girl who's played by Anna Chlumsky from My Girl.
Mm-hmm.
Her father is fired from his job while taking care of her, and the events of this movie that happened in reality led to the Family and Medical Leave Act.
Oh.
So yeah, he's fired from his job. And
this is the movie with the most famous guest star
ever.
Cameo appearance by the most famous man on the planet.
Let's play it.
We didn't say who her father was yet.
Oh, it's played by John Ritter.
John Ritter, the late John Ritter. It's Sarah Chalk of Scrubs. And
I'm glad John Ritter got to meet this person.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just say that.
Some wishes really do come true.
Child's wish.
Oh, I remember this.
They said I had a very important meeting in the Oval Office. Hello, Missy. Welcome to the White House.
Oh, my gosh. Mr. President, I didn't expect you to come.
I wouldn't have missed it. I understand you haven't been feeling too well.
Oh, no, but I'm feeling a lot better right now.
You know, Missy, I've had all kinds of people in this room. I've had prime ministers, presidents, even kings. But I've never been more pleased to receive anyone than you. I'm glad you came.
Aww. Aww. And then she got inspired to work for the Veep. She never left.
After her first boyfriend was killed by bees.
Yeah.
It's my girl meeting the president, and I think the only...
The actual fucking president.
The president is reading lines and acting there.
He's doing a decent job of it.
He's not bad.
He's good.
Yeah.
Well, he did. Yeah, he sold the nation on a bill of goods. He should be able to sell this role. I don't have anything.
We'll have a surplus, and everyone has a job. So,
what an asshole!
What a horrible president!
That isn't the last time he'll please a woman in the Oval Office.
He'll be very pleased to see one.
That's it for television.
That's Jesus. Coming up. That's in a year or two.
Yeah.
Cigar
Jesus
Vader.
Nothing in games still because January, again, I mentioned before, the N64 release schedule is notorious drip feed, and PlayStation, near as I can tell, doesn't have a lot happening in January. So we will head out of 1997. We'll go out with Our Lady Peace, that old clumsy jam.
Yeah!
And when we come back this same week, 2007.
Throw away the radio, suitcase keeps you awake. Hide the telephone, telephone in case you realize that some.
Mr. and Mrs. Internet and all the ships at sea. It's time for Diana's Classic Corner. We look even further back in time this week to see if there's any classic films worth watching. And honestly, for the week of January 20th to 26th, it's pretty thin, man. We got The Dudley Affair 50 years ago, starring James Mason and Simone Signore. Hopefully neither of them dies, because I like them both. That's in 1967. And then in 1942, 75 years ago, we've got Joan of Paris. I'm guessing that's a Joan of Arc movie. I'm not sure. I actually can't find it anywhere. But we're gonna bring this down into reality for a second, because also on January 20th, 1942, the Wannsee Conference happened, which is where a bunch of Nazi brass got together and decided to solve the Jewish question. And their solution to having Jews around was, maybe we should just kill them. Like, just all of them. Let's just kill everybody. So, in honor of that, I'm going to ask for a lot of potential trouble. If you have any questions about the Holocaust and whether it happened and what happened, please message me nicely on Twitter at ListeningNerd, and I will respond nicely, explaining, answering your questions, whatever you got. In the meantime, if you actually want to watch a movie about it, and Lord knows there's a lot of movies about the Holocaust, there is a movie right now on HBO. It's an HBO movie called Conspiracy, and it is actually pretty methodical and accurate depiction of this conference. It only took them a couple hours to just sort of decide, let's go with the kill everybody plan. And it's really interesting, just because, like, they're never talking about people like people. It's all just sort of concepts and bureaucracy, and, like, no one wants to step out a line too far, and they just start getting into fights over, like, whose jurisdiction things are under, instead of anyone going, Jesus Christ, we're talking about slaughtering civilians. So, yeah, it's on HBO Go right now, Conspiracy, a couple years ago, Kenneth Branagh, and on Amazon Prime. So I guess I'll recommend that, but I guess the one thing missing from it is that it assumes you know what happened next, with the whole 6 to 9 million people being killed. And like I said, if you don't, you can message me nicely, we can talk. And that's it for this week. Stay classic.
I know that song and fell in love with it as the soundtrack to HBO's new programming. Yes, it was like new season of Sopranos and Six Feet Under, and like, what is this song? This is beautiful. I love these shows.
I saw this. Every medical show had a montage set to this at some point. Grey's Anatomy, I'm sure, did it. I'm pretty sure Scrubs did it. Everybody got one of these in.
So this is The Fray, and the song How to Save a Life. But I guess it's just one of those, this happens a lot, but a super slow burn where it came out in August of 05, nobody paid attention, and then by 2007, it is charting very highly, and you'll hear this on the radio to this day.
I think I tried to make that association before. They're Canadian, man. So the song had been out, but America kind of got wind of it, and it lost the Grammy to Danny California, one of 700 California songs by the Red Hot Chili Peppers, just earlier that year.
As of January 2015, it sold 4.7 million downloads, just the single.
Wow.
The fourth best-selling rock song in digital history.
That's rock? I don't want to live in the world anymore.
Technically, man. Let me check in again.
You did Coldplay.
Oh, it's so rocking.
Song to get your hair cut to.
Yeah. Or my annual checkup. Also out this week, Wincing the Night Away, The Shins' third album, Atreyu, The Best Of, Pretty Ricky's Late Night Special, Freedom's Row, John Mellencamp's 19th album, and hats off to
I
the...
I wonder if there's songs about Indiana in it.
There's got to be. Got to be one. And then hats off to the Buskers from The View. Not the show, The View. And again, those are just six of the 400 albums that came out this week because it's 2007. And if you have the internet, you have an album. So movies this week, January 20th to the 26th, 2007, Blood and Chocolate.
Yeah.
I like Blood and
Have a brief
Chocolate.
Description of it because it
Blood and Chocolate and Crickets.
One of the worst reviewed films I think we've ever had to bring up. But it's the story of a young lady who is a werewolf, torn between her devotion to keeping this family secret a secret and her love for Hugh Dancy. Kind of predicting the Twilight phenomenon unsuccessfully years before that actually came to fruition.
No, I don't think we're years before.
The movie phenomenon.
Books are definitely out.
Yeah, the movies.
Yeah, but that's not what won the fucking country over. They don't read books.
Well, no, they do. There's a lot of lonely girls out there.
Only one book.
Also, Seraphim Falls. Oh. Liam Neeson, Pierce Brosnan.
Fucking another weird one. Civil War bounty hunter movie I have never heard of.
No.
Never heard of.
I'd love to go out to dinner with them. But I don't know if I want to see this movie. Either one of them or both.
Yeah.
I am down.
Yeah.
Gentlemen.
I'm trying to imagine how much laundry my mom would have to do after a dinner like that with these two guys. She loves these guys.
Also, Finishing the Game with James Franco.
That is the most fascinating movie I found out about that I never heard of. That is a mockumentary directed by Justin Lin of Fast and the Furious and Star Trek Beyond fame. A mockumentary about... This sent me down a loop, and I didn't get a lot of concrete information because I didn't really know about it. About the five men to audition in the 70s to be Bruce Lee's stand-in to finish the footage from Game of Death that he died in the middle of, and that there are multiple versions of Game of Death using the 100 minutes of footage Bruce Lee did film in the middle of filming Game of Death, the movie he was directing, and it's been finished twice. And this is a mockumentary about the Asian dudes who are going to stand in and try and replace Bruce Lee head behind the headshots.
I feel like I know the first one that came out is the most notorious because number one, there's a shot where a guy who's supposed to be Bruce Lee is looking into the mirror and it's just a poster of Bruce Lee. And number two, much more horrible, they use footage from Bruce Lee's actual funeral.
Yes. Yeah.
Which
like,
is fucking disgusting.
I didn't really even know about this. I knew about it, Bruce Lee's tragic death. I have seen Dragon. You must remember this, a great podcast, episode about Bruce and Brandon Lee and how they fucking both died in the middle
in
the dumbest, upswing sets.
Most random, stupid ways.
Yes, and it sucks. Like,
right,
the family's cursed.
Right at the crest of fame.
So I recommend that for more background on this, but Bruce Lee was already an international star and rising like to be a literal Hollywood star, the first ever bankable Asian male lead for Hollywood after Enter the Dragon, and this is his shot at another shot at stardom, his directorial American directorial debut, I think. He shot the center sequences of the Game of Death, all the impressive stuff he got in the can, but the everything else he wasn't able to complete. And I've never heard of this documentary, but I would love to see it now.
I'm curious to see it now.
Finishing the Game of Death. Get it?
Yeah.
James Franco's in it.
I've never seen any of the, feature length versions of Game of Death. I've only seen the, whatever it's 40 something minutes worth of the actual footage, which is so awesome.
It's insane. Bruce Lee's in charge of everything. So he's going all out.
Dude, he fights.
Probably pushing himself too hard.
He fights Kareem.
What?
Yeah,
is it? I always forget.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yeah, he fights Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Wow.
Wait, is it Kareem or Wilt Chamberlain? Sometimes I forget.
I think it's Kareem.
Whatever it is,
it's a guy who's 8 times taller than Bruce Lee.
I cannot believe I've never heard of this 2007 Justin Lin film because it.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is I'm fascinated by stories like this. So it's set. It's a mockumentary set in the 70s, and I will definitely seek it out. I do not know where to find it at this point. Real cool.
The same week, Jennifer Garner and Timothy Oliphant star in Catch and Release.
This is something I've been waiting for, and we talked earlier about being the first inauguration to be streamed on the internet. This is the first time I have ever encountered a movie with its own YouTube channel. So, and nobody has updated it in 9 years. I would guess since the DVD release, and this is a 10-year-old film. There are 4 videos. There's 162 subscribers. And every single new feature that YouTube has added in the last decade, they obviously did not address. But it is...
No annotations?
No annotations. But, like, no cover image. Like, no good thumbnail. Yeah. Everything is 480p because it's 10 years ago. But I was waiting to find the first official YouTube channel for a film that was created back 10 years ago to market a film. And astonishingly, I think this is the first one I found.
Because
there's a lot of stuff created after the fact or when YouTube added in like on-demand services.
Right.
But this is clearly very, very old.
Yeah.
For some romantic comedy.
It's not the first. It's the first that I found. But Jennifer Garner, husband dies. She falls in love with a Playboy Timothy Olyphant, but she has a best friend who's played by Kevin Smith.
Which is so weird. Like, they sought him out for this movie.
Mm-hmm. What? Huh.
Catch and release, uploaded January 23rd, 2007.
Yeah.
Isn't
that nuts? You're not who I thought you were.
Yeah. Hear that great audio codec, by the way?
Oh, wow.
It's all awful.
Catch and release.
Death and life are one. There falls no shadow where there shines no sun.
Kevin Smith.
You want to try that again, Kevin?
Him and Jennifer Garner were also in Daredevil.
Yes.
Four years earlier.
They have a mutual friend. I don't know who he is.
4 years earlier, some guy who was in the other movie this week, Smoking Aces with Ben Affleck, Andy Garcia, Jeremy Piven.
This seems like the last movie produced in the wake of like Quentin Tarantino's success, so every movie needs a hitman.
Yes.
It's a little late. And I do like the director, Joe
Carnahan?
Yeah. Whenever I see him do an interview, like watch an interview with that guy, he's foul-mouthed and pretty raw. I like him a lot. And he directed The Grey with Liam Neeson.
Oh, that's a good one.
But this, underrated. I feel like I watched it and just didn't care. Like, I lucky number slevened it.
I used to get those confused.
Me too.
Yeah,
seem like the same movie because there's Wacky Hitman. Yeah. They might be in Vegas. Yeah. I think this is the one where someone is hiding in a penthouse
Jeremy
and everyone's
Piven.
Trying to get him.
Yes.
Right.
Both
of them have the mental image of their movie poster being like 8 boxes, which each character, and they're
holding
all holding a gun.
Yep. Uh-huh.
And
you're exactly right.
It's like sepia tone, perhaps.
I saw Slevin in the theater, and for the next 7 years was like, which movie was that?
Yep.
Man.
Mm-hmm.
Which thankfully we've already talked about because it was an 06 movie.
But an insane cast, Ryan Reynolds, Ray Liotta, Alicia Keys, Ben Affleck.
Is that who's in the orange part? Because I remember that like working... I don't know where it was I was working, but
Alex
I would always
Rocco,
see
the voice of the
I would see
executive.
That,
itchy
I would see
and scratchy
that DVD
like.
Case, and I'd be like, "Who's the lady in the orange?"
That's Alicia Keys, I believe. Peter Berg also in the movie. Common,
come on,
never has a straight to video sequel.
And the thing we don't want to talk about at all, but is worth discussing.
From two of the six writers of Scary Movie.
I had it with these snakes on this damn plane.
I heard you. Now, can you please go get some Raid or a knife or something?
Discover what it takes.
I'm so hot.
To survive an epic movie.
You're the future kings and queens of Narnia.
Oh, my God. The talking beaver.
Man, so that's...
I want to kill myself.
The problem with these movies. Holy shit.
Fucking Seltzerberg, you pieces of shit.
Yeah, Jason Friedberg and Aaron Seltzer. The team, two out of the six writers from Scary
None of
movie,
the Wayans.
None of the Wayans. Cause
also,
they all,
that shit took six writers.
Yeah. Yeah, for real. Like, there's like two dozen gags. Mm-hmm. Why did they... Everybody gets two.
There's a lot of trailers to watch.
And I think it's a good example. You couldn't hear somebody fell on Paris Hilton. That really puts a timestamp on it. Meanwhile, she's like, Paris Hilton's kind of the only person who will star in these films. There's small cameos in this one from Crispin Glover as Willy Wonka.
Oh.
Shit, who was...
That's actually good casting.
Fred Willard is in the film. Cal Penn is one of the stars. It's real, real bad.
These
reviewed very bad.
Better.
Yeah, it was.
Feeling it's still better than Date Movie.
These guys haven't done that many interviews, but the one they have are kind of fascinating. I think they might be the product of nepotism. Their parents are involved in the movie industry, and they get to make these terrible movies. But I looked at their box office return, and it is enormous.
Yeah.
These movies are pretty terrible, but the kids seem to want to go see them. And part of what makes them terrible, I think, because they even cop to this. Mm-hmm. This movie opens up with a giant Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe parody because they have to assume, based on a trailer, that this is going to be one of the biggest movies of the year.
Yep.
And that's what this promotional campaign is hinging upon, that Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe is hugely successful, and it was not.
Yeah.
Kevin MacDonald from Kids in the Hall pops up as Harry Potter in the film.
No.
Yeah, it's all tragic. Tragic.
Yeah.
It's in the movie poster.
What's this one or one of the next ones where it's like you can really tell that they don't They're basing it off trailers and they don't know what's going to be big because like they have a big jumper thing that's like jumper never happened.
And then they made a movie called Meet the Spartans based on one film, like not even a genre of film.
Yep.
And they didn't have any other jokes to make, so they, I remember they had like YouTube stars. The Leave Britney Alone kid is in that fucking movie.
And it's like like a 10-minute, not 10 minutes, but a very extended scene of people being kicked into a pit. Like
that's one of the lowest reviewed movies of that year. Cost $30 million. It made $90 million. Yep. Meet the Spartans. They're
that's
worst.
Why they keep doing it? Because they can
look. Teens got to make out somewhere.
Well,
yeah. Look, so, they can bust them out pretty cheap, and the teenagers will go see them because teenagers are dumb.
David Carradine, no.
But it's if you look at this great wiki thing, this like Rotten Tomato approval meeting, Scary Movie's at around a 54 because that kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah,
it has an underdog approach. 7% for Date Movie, the next one. After that, 2% for this movie.
Fuck.
And it goes lower than that to 1 in 0. Disaster Movie. That's their first big bomb. Oof. After Meet the Spartans. Can anybody guess the name of, what did you call them? Seltzerberg?
Seltzerberg.
Seltzerberg's Twilight parody, because that did
movie
come out.
Movie.
It's called, they changed the movie formula.
Uh-huh. oh, yes.
Vampires suck. You may have seen this on video shelves or like unwatchable corners of your Amazon queue. The Starving Games. Starving
of
Games.
Of course, right.
Straight to video. And of course, the Fast and the Furious parody. Film. I just saw this pop up.
The Fast and Hilarious.
Called Super Fast. This is actually pretty cool. I'm going to guess it's a Taken parody, and it's just called Who the Fuck Took My Daughter?
That's drinking pretty funny. South Central juice in the hood.
Super Fast, according to the, which is a Fast and Furious one from 2015, if this is to be believed, it cost $20 million and made $2 million.
It premiered in Italy and the Arab Emirates and later came to like iTunes. It's all bad. All bad.
Oh, my God.
That takes us out of movies mercifully into TV of 2007.
Kind of a light week.
I have to read some of this cast list, though. Daryl Hammond plays Captain Jack Swallows.
Right.
I don't get what?
Carmen Electra,
Jack Sparrow. Daryl Hammond as Captain Jack Sparrow? That makes no sense.
Kevin Hart as himself in a Da Vinci Code parody. Carmen Electra as Mystique from the X-Men. Tony Cox, the little fella from Bad Santa, is one of the only consistent things in these movies. Crispin Glover is the Willy Wonka character. This is all really bizarre, and I believe Dave had it in a note somewhere, like people who should have known better.
Yeah. Sounds like a great movie to watch on mute.
Why do they even bother having quote-unquote plot? Because I know they have quote-unquote plot to get them from the Willy Wonka bit to the Narnia bit to the whatever.
Then you have Cat Williams to play the character Harry Beaver from the Chronicle of Narnia.
But, I mean, I know these things are so badly paced and all that there has to... Harry Potter, what are you doing here? But
Jennifer Coolidge plays the white bitch of Narnia, spelled
Jennifer
with a
Coolidge
G, like Gnarls Barkley.
She deserves so much better. She's funny.
Wish I was dead.
These people have more money than all of us combined. Just want to remind you that.
Yeah, millions and millions.
There's something to live for this week in 2007 was George W. Bush's State of the Union.
Yeah. It's all good, baby.
Well, this was notable because it was...
Man, I almost long for those days.
Well, yeah, it's weird.
I completely long for those days. I'd take W back.
We'll all wake up soon and realize it's all been a dream.
First of all, like there's going to be some clips. It's insane how civil this all is. I cannot imagine, you know, we'll have had the inauguration speech by Donald Trump at this point. And
you think he'll talk about himself?
You think he'll be as civil as George W. Bush is here? So this was the first State of the Union after midterm elections that switched Congress to a Democratic majority.
Boo!
He notes a major change in the Congress at the beginning of his speech, which is a really nice little thing here.
And tonight I have the high privilege and distinct honor of my own as the first president to begin the State of the Union message with these words, Madam Speaker.
And a standing ovation.
Everyone loves Pelosi.
Yes.
Man, it's crazy that I could pick out John Kerry's Frankenstein-y like from a mile away.
I lost before. But it wouldn't be
reaching across the aisle.
It wouldn't be a George W. Bush speech unless he had a gaffe, gaffe. And this one had one that some news outlets picked up on when he was again referring to the change in Congress and then the shift in parties.
Some in this chamber are new to the House and the Senate, and I congratulate the Democrat majority.
But that he called them the Democrat majority was kind of caused a little bit of strife back then. And again, it like that's what was political discourse. Wow. Like that's what like a little minor controversy was in 2007.
Before the president was wishing Happy New Year to his enemies.
Yes, and tweeting
to my enemies.
Can you imagine like Donald Trump?
You're not pitted against each other. God.
Can you imagine Donald Trump doing a State of the Union where he's going to talk about newly elected officials who he probably made fun of on Twitter?
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah, we definitely made fun of on Twitter. Jesus Christ.
Oh, anyway.
We can't do this again.
Yeah. SNL was another thing that
like that that little gaffe, it's nothing compared to Can't Get Fooled Again.
Yeah, that's
like and that's what I think it was just a gaffe. It wasn't him slighting the Democratic Party.
I have that
Democratic
memorized.
Party.
Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me once, shame on point is we can't get fooled again. That's my the point is whenever you're flubbing. Yeah. Point is we can't get fooled again.
Yes.
I miss him.
I can't believe I miss him. I can't believe we're in such a dark timeline where we miss George W.
I fucking miss Cheney.
That is
how bad I feel right now.
I just sit next to this lady.
I will take Dr. Strangelove right now.
Yeah.
That fucking Mr. Potter from It's a Wonderful Life. I want him to be in charge.
God,
because he's evil, but he's competent.
I grabbed a lot less pussy in my day too.
Well, do you guys miss Jeremy Piven? We talked about Smoking Aces before, but he also hosted Saturday Night Live.
Oh boy.
This is the only year in history that Jeremy Piven was at a point where he could host Saturday Night Live. You know, Entourage was big.
Entourage.
He had a movie out. The episode itself is notable because it was the start of a series of skits that would eventually lead to one of, in my opinion, one of the best SNL movies.
The last
SNL
movie.
Wow. Yeah. If I can hand over the audio cable, I can play the very first instance of one of my favorite reoccurring skits.
MacGruber, making life-saving inventions out of household materials.
Damn it, we're trapped!
That bomb is set to detonate in 20 seconds. What do we do, MacGruber?
Everybody stay calm. We're gonna make it out of here. Just do exactly as I say. Casey, hand me that paperclip.
You got it.
Jojo, grab that twine.
I'm on it.
Casey, gum wrapper.
Right here.
Jojo, that dog turd.
What?
The dog turd right by your foot.
I'm not picking up that dog turd.
10 seconds.
You heard her, Jojo. Give me the dog turd.
No, why do we need a dog turd?
That's my business. Now pick up the dog turd.
Just give him the dog turd.
You give the dog turd.
Yeah, Casey, give me the dog turd.
No, I can't. I'm keeping count. 3 seconds.
Fine, I'll get the dog turd. I just hope I have enough time to...
Why are they called Casey and Jojo?
I have no idea.
Wow. Yeah.
Love the sketch is one note, but I still think the sketch is really great.
Yeah.
They weirdly made a movie out of it, and the movie is fucking fantastic.
Just tell me who to fuck.
Just tell me what you want me to fuck.
Val Kilmer is the bad guy.
As a character named Cunt.
Yeah. And two scenes of the funniest sex scenes you'll ever see, including one where he's fucking a ghost on top of
her grave.
On top of her grave.
But that's like if you're watching The Last Man on Earth, it's just a Will Forte. Because, like, the sketch is this a MacGyver sketch? Is this a bad 80s parody? And the movie's not really any of those. It's just a Will Forte movie where he's kind of a bumbling superhero cop. And it's fucking great. Ryan Phillippe shoves a stalk of celery up his ass for the name of comedy.
it's weird that they do a MacGyver. I mean, because even the name MacGruber, even if the,
I don't think it. Other than that sketch, it doesn't have much to do with MacGyver at all.
It's just weird that like because that one's very much like he's gonna make a bunch of random shit. And his name's Max something, and it's like really. MacGyver's been off the air for so long and been irrelevant.
And that's why it seems so bizarre to make a movie out of it, because the running joke was that he tried and make something to defuse a bomb.
They die.
But it's basing a movie off of a 1 minute sketch that takes place in a single room.
Yeah.
Isn't that Wayne's World?
That is true. That is true.
Night of the Roxbury.
But MacGruber, nobody liked the Lonely Island guys handled the writing and the directing. They claimed they're in the process of writing a sequel if someone will let them make it.
Oh, I would love it.
I really encourage everyone to check out MacGruber. It is really, really funny.
So,
a pretty unique comedy.
As far as reoccurring skits on SNL go, this was the most reoccurring because just about every time they did MacGruber skits, they would do like two or three over the course of a night. So there's actually one more, like the last MacGruber skit of the night, which is just, it just, they intensify everything. Like everything gets grosser, everything gets weirder throughout the night. So here's the last MacGruber skit from that evening.
Shut.
We've got a doozy on our hands, MacGruber. That's over 10 pounds of C4 explosives. This baby's gonna blow in 3 seconds.
We can do this. Jojo, hand me that old bucket filled with bum sperm.
No.
got dizzy. Yeah. Didn't see that one coming. I love Will Forte.
3 seconds.
So what this week lacks in new TV, it makes up for it with bum sperm.
With bum sperm. Games this week, we talked about Phoenix Wright Justice for All last week as visual novel. Out this week, Hotel Dusk, Room 215, another visual novel game, which has like a cool visual style with like sketches of like it's about a former detective looking for his former partner. And then you basically hears about a room that can grant wishes, almost like a reverse nice Silent Hill or something. But I don't know. It's one of those DS games. I think you held it sideways so it looked like a book and the game was displayed vertically. I think it was that. And then it was re-released later once the DS really took off and they started the Touch Generations branding of like, here's games that these are games for your parents or whatever. Like the Touch Generations thing. I think they re-released it with that. But as a puzzle game, it was kind of criticized for being like, you couldn't solve the puzzle until the game was ready to let you solve the puzzle. Like, kind of beats you over the head with, this is the answer. Do you understand? This is the solution to the puzzle. I know. So while it's a very cool idea, and again, it was like there was no real equivalent up to that point, so it was like, oh, this is a thing you couldn't really do until now. But gained some notoriety, but it didn't really pan out. And then there was a sequel that didn't really release in the U.S., but we imported a copy eventually. But also out this week, The Shield for PS2.
Holy crap, I remember that game.
PC, and I remember playing it, but it did have the voice actors, and here's a... This really summarizes The Shield in practically two lines of dialogue.
The Cholo over there is Jorge Cruz, second lieutenant in the Biz Lats.
Yes!
He'll know where the gats are.
Any reason he's going to tell us?
Because it's either that or spend the next 10 to 20 in Chino wishing he had.
All right, Vic will go in, plant the drugs. You and I'll play lookout.
So it's in one
Vic
scene.
Mackey.
They say Bizlats, which you hear a bunch in the show. Gats, hear a bunch in the show. We're gonna go plant some drugs and make some bad guys get falsely.
Why the show is interesting?
And it's just like over, like everything about the show. Some right, but we talked a little bit when season 4 I think premiered. Last year, but
this excellent show. This was delayed and was supposed to branch seasons 3 and 4, but season 4 has ended. So this game comes out to supposedly resolve a storyline, but that never really got resolved.
Like the Armenian money train. And
that is a great season. God damn.
What a great show, beginning to end. I can't recommend the show enough. But the game, not very good.
Very, very bad. And that sequence, I think, is the stealth mission inside the the Mexican gang member's house. And it literally has a moment like, oh, I should never have eaten that burrito. And he runs in the bathroom and you just hear, oh, I those meals and shitting noises as you crawl around an apartment planting drugs. It's ridiculous.
I'm excreting out the feces. I imagine this is a lot like the 24 game or the Lost game, where it's like, if you're a fan of the game, you can forgive a lot of how shitty this game is.
And the whole cast is in it. It's pretty cool, except for Cheech Pounder.
No. I'm not in then. Cheech or bust.
It's got Dutch.
Cheech.
Julian. And then also this week, Legend of Heroes 3, Song of the Ocean on PSP, which is the fifth
Song
in the...
Song of the Ocean.
It's Song on the Floor.
It's despite it being called Legend of Heroes 3, I think it's the fifth game in the series. It's a port of an older game from Nihon Falcom, who makes Ys, which is one of my favorite
Falcom Punch
JRPG action adventure games. But this brand, this Legend of Heroes thing, kind of treaded water a bit in the aughts on PSP. Legend of Heroes, there were several, and I think we even featured this box art in like something about the box art. I just know it showed up in one of our Games Radar articles, but Fans might know this series more now for the Trails in the Sky series, which is showing up a lot on Steam and I guess Vita. Those are actually selling pretty well, and people are actually talking about them. As Final Fantasy gets bigger and more elaborate, and as a traditional JRPG just kind of falls off the face of the earth, the Trails in the Sky series is kind of where a lot of people are going. As even the Tales of games from Namco, even they are like getting a little bit more elaborate, or even Star Ocean. But like these Trails games, Legend of Heroes, this is very much a... what you liked about RPGs in the 90s, I guess, without, I don't know, not quite as good as some of those things from the 90s, but I don't know. It's a nice, it's scratching an itch that a lot of people can't get scratched otherwise. Or you might know it's part of the Dragon Slayer series, which was on the Turbo Duo and appeared on the NES as Legacy of the Wizard, which... long-time fans or listeners might
fantasy
remember...
fantasy game Mad Libs all over the place here.
Legacy of the Wizard on the NES is where the Tiny Michael sprite came from.
Oh, yay.
If you remember Talk Radar, Games Radar, the comics...
I still have the shirt Diana made.
Of Tiny Michael, the little sprite. He comes from Legacy of the Wizard. But that is the end of the show. Again, 302010.net is where you can follow along with each week's episodes. Leave a comment about the show. That is one of the most helpful things we have, is like people talking about any memories that are jogged from all of this stuff. And as always, you can support us either by shopping through our Amazon links, which you can find at the bottom of each post with you know, the DVDs we talk about. Well, you see a little picture of it, you can click on it, and you can buy whatever you want once you get to Amazon through our link. But you can also
help us out.
Helps us out. Patreon.com/LaserTime is the main way, though. Crowdfunded.
Direct access.
Yes.
Yeah, it's really good. It's an amazing little feat that helps us keep everything afloat. We really do appreciate it. For the price of $5 a month, to get exclusive shows and commentaries and a bunch of other free stuff in the backlog of video commentaries, really fun stuff, and we do appreciate it a lot. I always say the price of a game a year, you can help us live and continue to do all these on a regular basis.
Yeah, we gushed,
not bad.
We gushed about what was the Jackie Chan movie that we
First Strike.
And by the time this episode airs, we'll have a movie commentary for it.
We watched it on the 16th on our YouTube channel.
YouTube.com/LaserTime.
All kinds of fun videos there. Games we stream.
Those are the video's exclusive for patrons. Only patrons can see it.
But you can watch it live.
And again, not a lot of people do it. I know it's not perfect for everyone due to the film choices and time zones, but it is really fun. I just got a tweet saying, I love the Monday Night Movie more than anything. It's an excuse to watch a movie with a bunch of your friends all over the world and comment
at
the same
time. It made me realize there was never a reason to rewatch Home Alone 2.
Still better than Independence Day.
Down the hall and grab him by the pussy.
Patreon is also the home of Cheap Popcast, pro wrestling podcast. By the time this episode airs, we'll have around this time, we'll have a Royal Rumble 2017 episode. And I did resolve, because it'll be for the next episode of 302010, I will be talking about Royal Rumble 2007, because there are some cool things there to discuss.
And I won't be here, but I will be on Twitter at ListenANerd. And if you want to hear about video games, then there's Video Game Apocalypse, hosted by my husband Michael, who knows everything about video games. Even me, who's played all these Phoenix Wright games, I still don't remember a lot about them, but I like them. And no, I'll be here, even if we're going to talk about wrestling.
Wikibar is on Twitter.
I'll endure.
Not a clever name. He's just that good.
We usually end the show with birthdays, but starting with last week, we've also been talking about deaths that happened in this week, the 20th through the 26th. 1997 this week, Kurt Flood.
Baseball player.
I think so, yeah.
Mario Sunshine water pack.
That makes much more sense. Colonel Tom Parker.
Right, Elvis's manager who ruined his life.
Hey,
oh,
fuck
really?
That guy. Not even a real colonel.
Here, have
not even a real American.
Wow.
This week, 2007, Roberta Simple Salter.
Right, Roberta Simple Salter.
Simple.
I had heard of. She's the daughter of Amy Semple McPherson, who was a very famous It was a very famous evangelist.
Oh.
And then had like this weird incident where it's like she disappeared.
She disappeared. Yeah.
Right. And
she faked a kidnapping and just showed up alive and well.
Yeah, she's a fascinating character. But then her daughter was taking over the evangelism church, whatever.
Exists.
And then they got into like a fight with her brother or something. And so she died. She's like 96. But on top of all of this craziness, she invented Name That Tune.
What? The game show?
Yeah. Mm. What the hell?
Wow.
So where's the biopic?
Dead for 10 years.
Yep. R.I.P.
And then a hard pivot into the birthdays. People who were born somewhere in the 20th to the 26th.
Circle of life.
Joey Badass.
What?
Look him up. Buzz Aldrin, Rainn Wilson, Bill Maher. Jesus, you're loud today.
Okay.
David Lynch.
Yay.
Happy birthday to me.
Wrestler Valet Maurice.
We're having quinoa.
An inch of water. Emma Bunton, Hakeem Olajuwon, Gina Davis.
I'm wearing my birthday suit with his justice suit.
Grigory.
I can never be naked.
Rasputin.
Oh, we just passed the 100th anniversary of his death, too.
Yeah,
wow. About a month ago.
Billy Ocean, Guy Fieri, Steve Perry, John Hurt, Diane Lane, Linda Blair, DJ Jazzy Jeff, Kristen Schaal, Neil Diamond, Matthew Lillard, Michio Kaku, who... If you watched any Discovery Channel or Science Channel things about space or planets, he's the guy who was probably narrating.
The bird hair?
Maybe, yeah. He's got
an aliens guy?
Big hair, but yeah, he's the guy. Alicia Keys, Ellen DeGeneres, Wayne Gretzky, Eddie Van Halen, and now the quiz.
Oh, wait, before we even get to the quiz, I totally forgotten about Rasputin. If you've never read anything about the death of Rasputin, do yourself a favor.
Yeah.
It's hilarious.
Oh.
You couldn't kill that fucker.
Yeah, he's like stabbed and poisoned. And...
Stabbed and poisoned and... Shot, beaten, thrown in a river, chained up. It's hilarious. They could not stop him.
If you watch the first Hellboy, you'll see what happens to him.
Yep, true.
Born in 1974. Mm-hmm. Was in a few episodes of Arrested Development. Was a voice in the Lorax CG movie. He was in lots of The Daily Show.
Steve Carell?
No.
Oh, Ed Helms.
Ed Helms.
The Lorax dumbass. That movie is so un... God, I hate Dr. Seuss movies.
I still love that Danny DeVito was cast.
Yeah.
It's fine. Mm.
The trees.
I speak for the trees. Buy this new car.
Not the advertising rates of San Francisco are so in the toilet that they're still that, like, the Lorax advertising Ford automobiles is offensive enough, but that no one's bought... No one wants to advertise on the street, so that poster's still there to this day.
Where?
Over on 10th and Folsom. Nice. It's still on the bus stop.
Like a...
Also, the advertisement for the fourth season of Game of Thrones is above the sub shop.
Somewhere not long ago, I saw one for Left 4 Dead.
Seriously, somebody went out of business and never took down these ads. There's a giant Netflix Daredevil ad for season one over in the same area.
We'll head out with the most grating thing I can think of, which is this theme of the Shield. And when we come back next week, what happened 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and 10 years ago?
Bald cat with a baseball bat. See my ace all scrapped.
My way or the new way.
The black and blue way. The face down and all bruised way.
Bang.
The force is force. Get the illest talking. With the eyes of a heart. Farmington's finest with the crime and the spine.